You know, I noticed on Facebook that Zane shot this massive buck. Maybe he wasn't that massive, but he looked pretty good to me. And you've seen a lot of those pictures on the internet and stuff, like there's a guy sitting around a campfire and got a big smile on his face, and back behind him there's a presence, maybe a couple of eyes, maybe a bear, a lion. But there's a presence in the photograph that he's not even aware of. And I think to myself, you know, if he would have known that, would he be sitting there? Would he do something different? And I think he probably would have done something a little different. Which reminds me of a song that I just heard for the first time a couple of weeks ago, probably. It was on that Country's Family Reunion. John Conley did it. I know somebody else done it, one of the new guys, but it's called A Lot of Things Different. And in the song, John Conley says, you know, a lot of people look at the past and they say, I wouldn't change a thing. And he says, but oh, I would. I'd do a lot of things different. So the lesson today is to try to get us to realize there's a presence. And because of that presence in our past and in the future, we might want to do a lot of things different. I've kind of gone through and going to try to illustrate these points, I guess, with several different events that happened in my life or that I know have happened in several people's lives. I just want to try to relay that to you as best I can. But let's start reading in Psalms 23 and verse 1, one of those really familiar readings. It says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. See, we read and hear this passage a lot, and generally it's associated, I guess, with certain events. Unfortunately, generally those are events that we're not super happy about. But David here is keenly aware of a presence in his life, isn't he? I don't know if it's just a Church of Christ kind of thing, a church thing. All my life it seemed like we were very comfortable in the knowledge that Jesus is with us. We have a knowledge of that. We kind of run from the vivid reality that he's with us. My hope, my prayer, the intent of this lesson is to help you realize vividly Jesus' presence in your life. The title of the lesson will be Someone to Go With Me. All my life, I've had different events. I'm sure I'm going to have other events in my life where I just want somebody to go with me. We're going to talk about some of those. Things you don't want to do by yourself. You just want somebody with you. Let's start in Acts 17 and start there in verse 23 and read there. For it says, for as I passed by and beheld your devotions, I found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. Whom therefore you ignorantly worship, him declare I unto you. God that made the world and all things therein, seeing that he is Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands. Neither is worshipped with men's hands, as though he needed anything, seeing he giveth to all life and breath and all things. And he hath made of one blood all nations of men for to dwell on the face of the earth. And hath determined the time before appointed and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek the Lord, if happily they might feel after him and find him, though he be not far away from every one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain also as your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. One of the first events I remember that terrified me was going to school. I didn't have any real friends. I mean, we lived way out in the country, and I was scared to death of people. Oh, I didn't want to go to school. I really wanted my mother to go with me. I wanted somebody to go with me. I don't know if you've had some similar events, and maybe you felt the same way about school. But I was terrified. I cried every day. I was scared I wouldn't get home. And that's where I really wanted to be anyway. I wanted to be at home. Maybe that's my mother's fault, because I guess she was probably a pretty good mother. Maybe still is. Psalm 78 and verse 4, we're going to read there. It says, "We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praise of the Lord and His strength and His wonderful works that He hath done. For He established a testimony in Jacob and appointed a law in Israel, which He commanded our fathers that they should make them known to their children, that the generation to come might know them, even the children which should be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God and not forget the works of God, but keep His commandments." You see, education is important, and I guess my parents knew that. Another familiar reading says, "Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it." My mother talks about that a lot. She says, you know, that don't mean that he's never going to leave. It just means it's always going to be with him. My parents taught me about Jesus. They taught me about right and wrong and good character before I ever went to school. But you know what they really did? They made sure that Jesus went to school with me. There I was, terrified. I wanted somebody to go with me. But my parents sent Jesus, didn't they? He went with me. I didn't realize it so much, but I wonder if I would have acted a little differently if I would have really known His presence at that time. Would I have been terrified? I might have made a much better student than that one that sat in the corner just shivering and crying all day if I'd have known. You know, I wish we could take that camera like that guy had in the pictures that had the bear there, you know, and we could look through that lens so that all these moments in our life, that we could be the one in the camera and look back and say, there's Jesus right there. He's right with me right there. There's a presence there. It's always there, and I see it. Instead of living through these moments and living day to day and having a knowledge that He's there, but not a vivid reality that He's there. Sometimes my parents had to train me, and it wasn't always in a subtle way. Hebrews 12 and verse 7 says, "If you endure chastening, God dealeth with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if ye be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then ye are bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh, which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chasten us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness." So see, my parents, my dad, my mother, they did discipline me. And if you look at the world today, you see there's a terrible lack of discipline, don't you? We see all these shootings and these things going on in Missouri and New York or whatever, and we realize that these parents didn't send Jesus with their kids. And look at the wreck they have in their lives, because they don't realize that. They never knew. Well, my parents laid that, I guess, foundation when I was tiny. Sometimes it's in a really subtle way. And sometimes when that board was meeting my hind end, it wasn't so subtle. One of the next events that I remember vividly was stepping out in the aisle to be baptized. That's about as good a picture as I could find. Some of the others are big cathedral type things. But Jerry McCorkle came to Plainview when I should have thought of this before I got up here. I was probably 9 or 10, I don't remember. And I sat right on the front row with Brother Pinkerton, some of you know. And Jerry McCorkle had this issue, I guess he might steal. Whenever he said something with a P in it, he spit all over me. So I had a physical reaction to what Jerry McCorkle was saying. But the truth is, I had a reaction in my heart as well. My parents had prepared my heart to receive the gospel. I'm sure we had talked about the gospel. But for some reason, I remember vividly being pricked in my heart when Jerry McCorkle preached to me that day. I didn't get up and go to that aisle. That was on a Sunday night. I'm not going to forget this. So I tell my dad, I said, man, I think I need to be baptized. And he says, you probably do. Let's study about that. So I went, we went home and we studied for a couple of days. And by Wednesday night, I was ready. I was going up there. I was getting baptized and he was ready to do it. I needed somebody to go with me. That aisle was scary. How do you step out there? A lot of us here have done that. Well, truth is, Jesus knew that we were going to have these same thoughts, these reservations. He said in Acts 10, verse 37, now when they heard this, they were pricked in their heart and said to Peter and to the rest of the apostles, men and brethren, what shall we do? In Hebrews 4 and verse 1, it says, let us therefore fear lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. If you ever thought about stepping out in that aisle and you think, I need somebody to go with me. Well, I needed more than somebody to go with me. I'm going to submit to you that if I could take that picture, that I'd see Jesus carried me down that aisle. Because the faith that it took to motivate me, to move me, Jesus provided that faith. Because we know when we hear the word, it creates faith. And that being pricked in my heart and hearing the word created a faith that moved me to action. Jesus prepared me to step out in that aisle. Says here, for where two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them. We know, we have a knowledge of that, don't we? But if we could take that picture like I'm talking about, wouldn't we see Jesus sitting right beside us, carrying us down the aisle, moving us to do things that we can't do by ourselves because we need somebody to go with us? I don't relate to this very well, especially the one on the left, the one on the left. But we all know that girls, young women that are getting married, brides, they want their dad to go with them down the aisle, don't they? There's some situations where that may or may not be true, but for the most part, that's ideal. I've never seen a bride leave the church by herself. So let's wrap our minds around that just a little bit. You know, the groom leaves the church with the bride basically every time. The bride needs somebody. The groom needs somebody. And God knew that. Jesus knew that. So they provided us someone to go with us. In, down the aisle when we're going in. And down the aisle when we're going out. Somebody that's with you all your life before you got married as a bride. Somebody that's going to be with you all your life after you're married as your husband. Somebody to go with you. See, Jesus is always looking out for us and going with us. Ephesians 5 and verse 31 says, for this cause shall man leave his father and mother and shall be joined unto his wife, and they too shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. See, those of us that understand marriage understand that we're joined together, that we're not going to be alone, that the church is the bride of Christ. And where the church is, where you are, the church, Jesus is going to be there. It's not a subtle thing at all. Galatians 6, starting there in verse 11. It should be 12, 13 on down. I deleted too much there, so. If a man be overcome in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an... That should be probably 6 in verse 1. We'll start reading there. Brethren, if a man be overtaken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such an one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. But let every man prove his own work, and then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone, and not in another. For every man shall bear his own burden. Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. Be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his face shall of flesh reap corruption. So, but he that soweth to the Spirit shall the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them of the household of faith. John 13 and verse 34. A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, that ye also love one another. By this shall all men know that ye are my disciples, if you love one to another. If you have that love one to another. We need each other. I'm going to try to relay a story to you. And I think I can do that. Let's go ahead and read this verse too. Seeing ye have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit and the unfeigned love of brethren, see that you love one another with a pure heart fervently. When we were in Plainview, right before I moved to Canadian, it's probably been, I'm going to say 11, 12 years ago now. And some of you kind of know about this, so Keenan happened to be friends with Nicholas Lane and Cade Miller. Now, those are lifelong family acquaintances. And they all went hunting, come back to the house, clean the gun, and Cade Miller got shot in my house and killed. Well, I don't tell you this because I want you to feel sorry for us, but I'm telling you this because in a certain event and how this kind of played out. I had to make a call to Cade's dad. It was a horrible thing. And tell him that, hey, he's not going to make it. Well, by the time we get to the hospital, it's obvious that things aren't good. He's already passed. They've already told the family. And then in we walk. And Mark Miller walks up to me. You know what he says? He says, are you going to be all right? So, if I can get through this, I'm going to. But you see the face of God in your brethren. And you don't want to miss that, because that's a very vivid thing. I'm sure you've had situations in your life that would be very similar. Really rough times. But if we can step back, like I say, and just get that camera out, we will see Jesus' presence. He's always there. We need to feel that, because I think when we know that, we'll do a lot of things different. One of the situations where we do not want to be alone and we want somebody to go with us is in our death, when we leave this life. You know, is there another time in your life that you're going to need somebody more than when you pass from this one? I don't think so. And it's a fearful thing. And God did not want us to have that fear. And He prepared to help us in that area. Psalms 23 and verse 4 says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. And then in John 14 and verse 1, it says, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And whither I go, you know, and the way you know. Thomas saith unto him, Lord, we know not whither thou goest, and how can we know the way? Jesus saith unto him, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me. So one of the most difficult parts of living is moving from this life to eternity. And Jesus is there with us. Some of us are older, some of us are younger. It don't matter. We have a confidence, and we need to have a vivid reality that Jesus is with us. You know, it says here that if you know Jesus, you know the way. One thing I really despise is being lost and not knowing how to get somewhere that I need to get to. I guess that's a fear, even. I've got drivers that if you try to send them to a well they've never been to, they're paralyzed. They're done. But if they've been there and they know the way, then they can be very productive. They don't have to have that hanging over them. I don't know where I'm going. We know Jesus. We know the way. We should be very productive. We don't have that fear. We have somebody to go with us. Matthew 28 and verse 19 said, go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the world. Amen. Very familiar reading. But in this context, don't it seem a little different when you realize that he says, I am with you always? So we've been asked to do very difficult things as humans, go into the world and preach these things. And you know what? I need somebody to go with me. Jesus says, I'm with you. Okay, now for the other little story. I'm going to do a chronological type thing here. Several months ago, I was watching PBS. Don't ask me why. I can't imagine how I come across that. But something struck me as, it was like a genealogy type show, and it had Derek Jeter, Rebecca Lobo, and Billie Jean King. You might know one of those names or none. It don't matter. But basically, they went back in these people's family history, and they analyzed generations before. And what they figured out was that some of Derek Jeter's talents, abilities, were genetic. But the truth is, a lot of it was environmental. That generations before him, maybe four generations ago, his family valued athletics. It's the same with education. If your family, generations ago, valued education, then more than likely that's filtered down through the generations to you so that you value education. Well, we could talk about a lot of things like that. What values are passed down from generation to generation. But now this leads me to the next thing. Sitting right there in the chair that I usually sit in, I was having a struggle to be engaged in the service. Is that a good way to say it? You may be struggling right now. I hope not, but from time to time I have those struggles. And maybe it's because the lesson don't really excite me or something. I don't know. Maybe I'm tired. Maybe it's this afternoon deal. But sometimes I struggle. But I look down the aisle in my weakness and I see my whole family there. Okay? And I think, that's a good deal. We're where we're supposed to be. And they're with me. You can do the same right now. Isn't it great? Well, I go home that night, and for some reason, I'm outside, and it's super dark. Sky is clear, and I see stars. And for some reason, I'm looking at those, and I'm thinking, you know, there's more stars in heaven than there's ever been people on the face of the earth. That's a big deal. And somewhere in my mind, past those stars is heaven. Okay. I don't know why, but when I think about heaven, I think about my granddad. You probably have somebody like that. I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing. Just in this particular instance, it's important for you to know that I thought about my granddad. And then I start tracing all I was sitting there on that aisle with my whole family. And I realized that my granddad made decisions that have impacted my granddaughter, who he never knew. And she's got a tremendously greater chance to be saved and be a Christian because of decisions my granddad made generations ago. Okay? So I call my dad up, and I think this is an epiphany or whatever. Wow. I just noticed this is great. And then I realized how stupid I must be not to realize that before. And he says, my granddad was a Church of Christ preacher. I didn't even know that. So generations before, men were making decisions that impact my granddaughter that they'll never know. And I think, sometimes I'm needing somebody to go with me. My granddad's already doing that. My great-granddad's doing that, and I didn't even know. So it's very important that we see the presence in the picture, in the moment, in your life. Because if you'll look, you'll see that Jesus has been with you. And it's not always so subtle, is it? It's only subtle when we make it subtle. You should realize Christ and the people he surrounds you with, and I'm talking about in your spouse, in your children, your brothers and sisters, the people you work with, you should see Christ vividly. See, his realized presence causes you to do a lot of things different. So that's what I encourage you today. That's really all I have to say, is that in your life, I want you to see Christ vividly. Some of you here might not have heard the gospel preached, and we didn't do that. But if you have, let Jesus carry you down that aisle to the front. If you've erred or need the prayer of the church for anything, that's what we're here for. Jesus put us here because you have somebody with you.